Craig Roberts, University of Missouri professor in plant sciences, also state forage crop specialist.
All right. And you are planning for growers some events, state fescue schools in two locations in Missouri next month. And of course, the topic is a fescue, but you're dealing with a replacement for what has become toxic fescue for cattle. Tell us about what the goals are in these events.
Well, the goals in these events are to help producers learn how to kill out the old Kentucky 31 tall fescue and how to plant the new tall fescue, which is non-toxic. It is infected with a fungus, but it's a beneficial fungus. That's one of the main goals. Another goal is to help producers learn how to manage the new grass. It's so palatable that the cattle don't quit eating it, and they can eat it down into the ground, what we call overgrazing. And so we want to spend some time talking about how to prevent overgrazing management, I guess you would call that. There's also a goal where we want producers to be familiar with what is out there, and that would include products. There are several what we call novel endophytes. There are several new tall fescues out on the market now, and there are also cost share opportunities. Quite a bit of cost share is available. We're expecting that this year. So those are some of the goals. We want them, of course, to learn to become re-familiar with fescue toxicosis and the dangers, the economic dangers, and problems that it just causes for an enterprise.
Okay. Well, certainly, given the drought, the management is key for livestock producers. And how widespread has this toxic fescue been in Missouri and beyond Missouri's borders, if you know that?
Yeah. Probably 90% of our fields are highly infected. Our producers have been living with it and managing it all these years, and not completely aware of what it has cost, but it's widespread, extremely widespread in the state of Missouri, but also is in any similar environment, which would include southern Illinois, Kentucky, Virginia, what we call the mid-Atlantic states. That's the part of the country that we call the fescue belt. It is the major forage livestock disorder. It's maybe not the major livestock, but as far as forage crop related disorder, it's the major one in Missouri.
Would that encompass parts of Indiana and Ohio by chance?
Yes, it includes all of those regions as well.
Okay. And you said it's been around for a long time. What are the noticeable effects, if there are any? You said some producers don't even realize what the effects are.
Well, the symptoms that are noticeable would be things like a rough hair coat in the summer. Instead of shedding the hair coat and slicking off, the cattle just look like they're built for the winter. So that hair coat is retained through May, June, July, even August. That's a symptom that's noticeable. Another one that's more grotesque shows up in the winter, and that is fescue foot, any kind of lameness or the hoof that falls off, or the switch of the tail that falls off. Those are the most noticeable. Those are not by any means the most damaging economically, but those are the ones that people can see.
Okay. So what have been producers been doing to manage up until now planting something other than fescue? And why is it important, or why is it a good idea to go back to this, or to use this newer fescue that's less toxic?
Well, what people have been doing in the past, there are really two avenues of management. You can either replant to something non-toxic, or you can practice a lot of interseeding and feeding management to offset the toxic fescue. Managing toxic fescue usually involves things like interseeding legumes, feeding some kind of supplement to the cattle, rotating onto a summer field like in your part of the country, it would be Bermuda grass, in southern Missouri. Things like that can help. They do not really take care of the problem. They just lessen the effects. and also they represent considerable input costs. So that's why, yes, management can work partially and do a pretty good job. It's expensive and time-consuming, and most of the time people are not doing those things. They're doing one or two of them, which only gets them helps them recover part of what they've lost. Now, as far as the replants, we have had many efforts to replant and many forages on the market to replant. The problem is, until now, those forages that have been used in the replants have lacked persistence. For instance, in the mid-1980s, the University of Missouri, University of Kentucky, and several other universities released what are called endophyte-free tall fescues. They were, just like they sound, they were tall fescue grasses that didn't have a fungus in them, a toxic fungus. And we found out within a couple of years that those plants didn't live. Okay, now they could live in certain pockets where there was not a lot of environmental pressure, there was plenty of moisture, the soil was deep, and so on. But by and large, they disappeared. And so for a long time, we've not had anything really that we could count on that would be persistent. If we wanted to kill the old tall fescue and plant something in, we just didn't have anything. We had orchard grass, we had brome grass. Those are the suggestions that surface all the time but don't work. and so until now, we haven't really had anything. These new tall fescues are not endophyte free. In other words, they do have a fungus inside them. But the fungus that is in these new tall fescues is not toxic. So it sort of goes into the grass, and the grass can sense it and respond with a lot of resistance to drought and insects and so on. The way that one plant breeder says it is tall fescue without this fungus is Clark Kent, but tall fescue with this fungus is Superman. And so it's a lot more powerful in environmental stresses. You know, it's a lot more able to resist some of these threatening effects.
Okay. Now, you are in partnership with the Alliance for Grassland Renewal, USDA, NRCS, and, of course, MU Extension to put these schools on. Tell growers where they can go to register. Is there a limit for the classes? Is there a cost? Give us the details.
Right. Well, there are two schools. They are one-day schools that begin in mid-morning and are done before supper. We wanted to schedule them in that way so the producers wouldn't have to pay for lodging. And the first school is March the 18th at Southwest Center near Mount Vernon. And you can call the center there for the details or go to an extension office. They should know some of this information. They cost $60 for an individual, or they cost $110, I believe it is, for a couple. The enrollment is limited to 60. We probably won't fill up. This is our first year, and they're going to follow the same pattern as the grazing schools. Missouri has a lot of grazing schools that are taught throughout our regions, and they started out, you know, with one or two schools and built up. Last year we had 28 schools. So that's where we are. We're just launching the first one in the Ozarks March the 18th. Now in North Missouri, there's one March the 21st on a Thursday. It's the same school. It's duplicated up there, and same price structure and everything. The schools, by the way, are taught by NRCS, University of Missouri. Producers will help teach this. We have also some private industry folks who will be teaching. In other words, the person who does the endophyte testing, the fungus testing for most of the United States, will be there also giving presentations. So it's well-read. It involves not just government and university and producers. It also involves major seed companies and private industries. It is the most significant problem in Missouri in terms of forage livestock agriculture. We did some calculations and were able to tally up the cost to beef producers. The fescue toxicosis costs our beef producers between $160 and $200 million every year. That's just beef. And those are not exaggerated numbers. Those aren't numbers that are decorated with multipliers. They are the real numbers.
In the overarching umbrella of the drought, how much is this going to help? Or how
much will it affect the replanting program and successes? And that's a good question, but I'll tell you, we had the same question last year. You know, part of the school includes demos, and we're demoing every tall fescue that has one of these non-toxic endophytes. Every one of them is in a plot there that people can look at, and it will be lightly grazed to so that we can see the effect of grazing on these plots. Okay, but we established those plots in September of 2012. Think about that. I mean, we were coming through a historical drought, and we twiddled our thumbs and said, are we really going to go through with this? Because it's expensive seed. This is experimental seed. Do we want to risk this? And decided that, yes, it's worth the risk. So we went ahead and planted it all. And it came up. We had a little rain and good weather, and those plots are going to be grazed this year, less than 6 months later. So even though we had a historical drought, we got plots, successful plots, both at Mount Vernon in the Ozarks and at Linnaeus near Iowa. So I don't believe it's going to be a deal breaker to have dry weather.